And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. For the next half hour, we're going to be focusing on Project Jupiter, the massive data center that is planned for the South County and the all of the things that go along with that. We're going to be speaking with Casey Hovden and Massillon Locke. They are both with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center, and they have two lawsuits pending regarding Project Jupiter that we will be getting into. Want to thank both of you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Good morning. I mentioned earlier at the start of the show, we're doing this on conference call. So you won't, if you're listening and you want to add to the discussion, you won't be able to call up and join us. But you can ask a question. Call us 575-526-5825 and leave a question with our producer, Minerva Rivera. And I want to just turn it over to you both to begin with. Let's start with, like I said, there are two lawsuits pending. One I have a little bit of understanding of because I was a journalist, and that is the open meetings lawsuit. So why don't we start with that one? Whoever wants to just give us just a basic explanation of what your claim is in that lawsuit.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So our Open Meetings Act lawsuit is essentially about public transparency. And so on September 19th, that contentious public hearing where the Doniana County Board of Commissioners adopted two ordinances authorizing tax incentives and financial support for Project Jupiter, the county board had suddenly moved into a closed meeting without giving proper notice to the public and specifying why they did so, and that's required under the Open Meetings Act. And so the solution under the Open Meetings Act, when ordinances are adopted in a meeting not held in compliance, are to void any ordinances adopted during that meeting. And so we have filed suit, and we're asking the court to take a look at what the county board did and ultimately void both of those ordinances.
And just specifically, I know there are some reasons why you are able to go into a closed meeting and why you're not. Why was this their reasons not acceptable?
Yeah, absolutely. So during the meeting, they named a number of exceptions, and the Open Meetings Act does allow a limited number of exceptions for local government boards and public bodies to move into a closed meeting, but they're very, very limited. And so that day, the county read off a number of the exceptions, including discussion on property and water rights, attorney-client privilege, and a number of unlimited personnel matters. But those things that have to be specifically stated. So if you're talking about limited personnel matters, you have to say this is about this employee and their termination or something like that. And then for the attorney-client privilege one, a general exception doesn't apply. It has to be about pending or threatened or current litigation. And it has to actually exist at that time, and you have to state out to the public what litigation that is, and then you can move into closed session under that limited personnel matter. That day on September 19th, the board relied generally on the attorney-client privilege, and they said they did not have to specify to the public why they were moving into closed session.
And specifically, what actions did they take in that closed session?
That's part of the reason the lawsuit was filed, and part of the reason why the Open Meetings Act exists is because all sort of government dealings and decisions on public matters need to be made in the public eye. And so when the board moves into closed session, no one knows what's going on in there. No one knows what they're talking about, what decisions are made. And so that's why the Open Meetings Act exists. So can't really answer that because as members of the public, we weren't a part of that closed meeting.
Okay. And I guess my last one on that is, it's my understanding that if the judge were to find in your favor, if the court were to find in your favor, couldn't they just come back and take the same action in an open session?
Yes, essentially they would have to hold the September 19th hearing if they wanted to hold it again and adopt those ordinances. They'd have to have a full replay. And during that, they would have to make sure that they're not moving into closed session without proper notice, you know, and make every sort of decision and conversation and discussion about those ordinances and Project Jupiter in the public eye.
Daisy?
Yeah. Hey, good morning, Casey.
Good morning, Daisy.
And so full disclosure, Casey, with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center and myself, you know, have collectively been working on Project Jupiter stuff and water stuff in Sunland Park for several years now. And so my question about the county and the Opens Meeting Act violation is, so I guess it just if we want for our college to hear sort of an update on where the case is, because I know we're going to dive into the other case and sort of how contentious it's sort of been at with the courts here in the county. But is that the same for this case in terms of judge assignments and whatnot?
Right now, we have been assigned a judge, Judge Juan Manuel Arrieta, and it's currently under him. And so we haven't seen any movement yet, but we'll be keeping folks posted on our e-blast. You can go to nmlc.org in order to sign up for those, as well as on our social media at NMLC. And that's the way we'll keep folks updated. And now it's in the court's hands. So from there, I don't know, Madeline, if you have anything to add there.
The earlier case seems to me like it might be the more consequential one, just because our open meetings laws are so weak that, you know, as I said earlier, the consequence, even if you prevail, it wouldn't necessarily stop them. So can you explain a little bit in more detail the first lawsuit you filed, where it is in the process, and what the consequences of it could be if you were successful?
Yeah, so the first lawsuit's a little bit different, but based on that same public transparency and holding local government bodies accountable under the law, in that, so when the local county board adopted the two ordinances under both local and state law, the local county board was supposed to have all this information that they considered and under these certain factors, like thinking about cost-benefit analysis, the impacts of public health and the environment, the impacts to the tax revenue base if tax incentives are given to a large corporation versus not. And based on the publicly available administrative record, which we believe to be the application that was submitted to the county by the Project Jupiter companies, which was missing pages, had a lot of blank pages within it, and then really just had only the benefits of Project Jupiter around, we're going to bring so many jobs, we're going to bring so much money to the county, but no sort of analyses on the impacts to the environment, to the public health, emissions, water usage, impacts on the tax revenue that would be lost if incentives are given. There's nothing in there. And so based on that, we are arguing in court that there is no way that the Doniana County Board could have complied with all the applicable laws and regulations when it adopted the ordinances. And so we filed that in the Third Judicial District Court down here in Southern New Mexico. And it went through all the judges in the district, either recused themselves or parties engaged in peremptory recusals of the judges. And so then we ended up having the case sent up to the New Mexico Supreme Court, where the Chief Justice then appointed a judge from the judicial district to oversee the case.
I probably should have started by asking you, for people who aren't familiar with your organization, can you talk a little bit about the Environmental Law Center? And as Daisy mentioned, this isn't the only case in Southern New Mexico that you guys are working on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to pass it to my colleague, Madeline Locke, who she's senior staff attorney at the Law Center and really leading on our movement lawyering framework and how the Law Center functions differently than your typical litigation firm. So go for it, Madeline.
Thanks, Casey. So the New Mexico Environmental Law Center is the state's only exclusively environmental justice-focused law center. We work with low-income communities and communities of color across the state on a myriad of different environmental justice and environmental racism issues. And, yeah, I think, I don't know if Casey or Daisy have mentioned this, we've been working in Southern New Mexico with folks in Santa Teresa and Sunland Park and Las Cruces on water issues, water quality issues for a couple years now, and then Project Jupiter sort of landed as a surprise in our laps about a year ago. We've been able to work with Daisy and some other folks, and it's been a wild ride. But
yeah, and actually, if you all, I'm going down that line, if you want to talk about the other work that you do around the state, because it is small law firm, right? You're all small and mighty.
Yeah.
But I know that you have cases open and many other environmental concerns in different areas of New Mexico.
Yeah. So, and you said small, but mighty. There's three full-time staff attorneys and one part-time attorney. So we, I think, carry more than our weight, I would say. But we do a lot of different work. So like in Albuquerque, Bernalillo County, we do a lot of air quality work and cumulative impacts rulemaking and air pollution mitigation, all that good stuff. Then up in the northwest part of the state, we work with indigenous communities fighting uranium mining and reclamation, not fighting the reclamation, but working with communities to ensure reclamation actually happens with abandoned uranium mines up over there. And there's actually a new proposed mine called the La Jara Mesa mine that will have really significant and detrimental impacts to Mount Taylor over there. So we're asking folks to engage with the Mining and Minerals Division and comment on that mining company's proposal, because it will be really, really harmful to folks up there and to all of us. So, yeah, we're definitely busy.
Getting back to Project Jupiter, there was legislation that went through last year that none of us were aware of that kind of paved the way for this in terms of the power plant and not having to follow all the regulations that all the other power plants have to follow. And then it kind of went through at the county before there was really any kind of opportunity. I won't say there wasn't protest. There was significant protest. But there's certainly, by the time it was passed, most people were just learning about it. And for such a massive change, I guess other than voting against county commissioners and all that kind of things, what can be done legally? Obviously, you're doing everything you can. Is there anything more that could be done, I guess, is the question, not just legally, but legislatively? For somebody who's very concerned about this, what would you advocate that they do?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. And, you know, to say and start up front that the legal system was created and designed, right, to work in a certain way, and especially against communities and the public interest. And so we use litigation as a tool, but we see it as just a tool in our larger toolbox that's available to folks. And really, we do believe that the larger movement and work against big projects like Project Jupiter happen on the ground in communities. And so for folks listening and that want to get engaged, the biggest thing you can do is start becoming informed and talking to your neighbors, talking to friends and family around data centers and AI. And like, what does it mean for our community, especially when we think about southern New Mexico, where we don't have any water? The whole state of New Mexico is in a mega drought, right? But then when we look at southern New Mexico, where our Rio Grande doesn't run all year round, we only get a certain amount of water every year, and that's what replenishes our aquifers in a largely agricultural community. So I think talking to folks at the grocery store and stuff like that, so staying informed, I think that's the biggest way we can start pushing a movement back, because at the end of the day, the power rests in the community on the ground. And this is like y'all's home, so you're allowed to push back against things that come in without your consent.
We really haven't talked any in this show yet about the environmental impacts. Can one of you address what your concerns are?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a ton of different things going on with data centers coming into town. I'll talk about the water, and then I'll pass it to Maslin as our air quality expert. And we do actually have a way for folks to help engage on that air quality fight. But for the water impacts alone, so data centers use a ton of water. And what we're seeing with a lot of data centers, including Project Jupiter, is that they're saying, oh, well, we're going to use a closed loop system. We've come up with new ways that won't use a lot of water when we cool the system. Well, the first thing is there's no such thing as a truly closed loop system. They have to pull that water out of the cooling system and cool it down. And that eventually, that's going to evaporate some of that water. So there's no such thing as a fully reusable, recyclable system. And then the other half of that is that 75% of data centers' actual water usage comes from the electricity generation. And that's a part that's not really reported. Most data centers aren't required to record or report how much water they're using in that capacity. And that's where we see those billions of gallons being used. The problem, too, with data centers and water is that they need clean water in order to cool their systems and to run. Because any sort of water that is contaminated or more brackish, it corrodes the computer chips and technological systems a lot faster.
And so they have to use the public water supply in order to power the data center. And so when we look at a place like Southern New Mexico and Sunland Park and Santa Teresa especially, where they haven't had access to clean, safe, and accessible drinking water for decades already, we've seen in the application packet from the companies that they're intending to enter into a partnership with the public utility and rely on the public water supply for the data center. And so when we look at it and the community is going, it's just not fair, and it really does jeopardize access to water for drinking, for showering, for cooking, just in your home. And that's a basic fundamental right. So that's a big part of this fight. But I'll pass it to Maslin on the air stuff.
Yeah, just real quickly. Yeah, so they would tap into the CRUA system. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're going to be tapping into, they're going to be connecting to the public water supply from CRUA. And CRUA is that Camino Real Regional Utility Authority, which has been the public utility serving Sunland Park and Santa Teresa and outlying Colonia residents for their safe, the clean and safe drinking water that they haven't had for decades. But they're going to be, yes, connecting to the public water supply for their water.
Okay. Just wanted to, yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to jump in. I just wanted to clarify that.
No, you're good. So, yeah, and I want to echo Casey's point about the importance of talking to each other about all this. I thank y'all for the opportunity to talk about this. You know, we're seeing the Project Jupiter developers do a lot of work, putting out a lot of information. So I'm grateful that we get a chance to kind of clarify some things and tell folks kind of how bad this project really is. So from the air standpoint, right now we're talking about something called a microgrid, which is basically a natural gas power plant. They're proposing to build two of them within a mile of each other. Both of them on their own should really be regulated as major air pollution sources, but they've split the facilities into two different grids in order to avoid really more stringent regulation. But this all matters because air pollution impacts public health, right? Which then impacts everything else, right? An unhealthy public is an unhealthy economy. For those folks that are claiming this is going to be so good for the economy, I don't think they're taking that fact into consideration. So, you know, these microgrids are sources that are going to emit major amounts of greenhouse gases, major amounts of things that contribute to ozone, which is an air pollutant that also negatively impacts public health. And especially in the southern part of the state, it's already out of compliance with the ozone requirements. It's going to be very, very impactful for the folks that live down there and for the whole state and for folks across state lines, right? We know air pollution doesn't stop at an arbitrary state line or country border. So it's going to have pretty significant and detrimental health impacts, I think, for the public. And that's just the microgrids. That's not including whatever will be in the rest of the campus for Project Jupiter.
Yeah, and Maslin, can you share how folks can participate in this process? So if they're interested in learning, about the microgrids themselves.
Keeping me on track.
Yeah, and yes. And what they can do.
Yeah, so we've been trying to share as much information about it all as we can, but right now, if you go to our website, or I think our socials, as Casey said, at NMELC, there's a link there where you can send a letter to the New Mexico Environment Department. So right now we're kind of in the beginning stages of the air permitting process for these two natural gas power plants. And we're at the stage where the public can show the Environment Department that there's significant interest in these operations so that they have to hold a public hearing in Santa Teresa. So if folks go and click the link, they can send a letter demanding a public hearing and a few other things, demanding that ultimately these air permits be denied because there's already enough pollution in the area. But I don't know, Casey, is there another way? I know it's at NMELC, and I think if you sign up online at NMELC.org, you can do the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way for folks to quickly access it, and it takes like under a minute, but we've also created materials in which if you want to submit your own comments and share your own concerns with NMED, there's guides there on how to do that as well.
Will the Public Regulation Commission eventually be responsible for both approving and then oversight over those, or is there some other way?
Yeah, so the Public Regulatory Commission will regulate sort of the functioning of the grids when they're up and running. If, and I think you mentioned this, if something changes legislatively that will require the microgrids to comply with energy transition goals in terms of reducing their greenhouse gas emissions over time, then the PRC would be responsible for that. But right now, as it stands, it's entirely within the Environment Department's purview to permit their ability to release greenhouse gases and any other air pollutants.
And we've been talking about the fact that the legislature is down to its last day. I'm sure you've been following the bills that will impact this. Does it look like anything is going to get through this year? That was a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say what we see at the legislature all the time, right, is that if they want to get something done, they tend to do it. And if they don't, they tend to stop it. So I think time will tell.
Yeah.
No. But I don't know, Casey, if you have more thoughts about that, but that's about all the wisdom I think I can offer.
Yeah, just echoing Maslin exactly. That, again, is out of our control, but we'll keep an eye on it. Suggest folks do the same.
Yeah, and so just talking about the legislation, I was going to say, you know, the Clear Horizons Act ultimately failed on the Senate floor, which could help this situation and, you know, in terms of pollution and greenhouse gases. And the Microgrid Oversight Act, you know, right now is in the House, and we shall see, also crossing our fingers. But I'm curious, too, in terms of the legislature and sort of new rules coming through, and how does that impact y'all's daily sort of work? Because I would imagine that what was passed last year in 2025 and the amendment that allowed this project to take place, how is that impacting then your ability, right, and our work around looking at different cases or just looking at the work and what's going on in New Mexico?
I don't know, Casey, you want me to try?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. That's a great question, Daisy. I think the thing about what happens at the legislature is that until it's being implemented by a state agency, you know, it may or may not impact what we're doing. I think one of the bills I always think about was a couple of years ago when the legislature adopted language for various environmental statutes to say that our environmental regulations could be more stringent than the federal government, which has actually proven to be really helpful, right, in this context that we are now living in and we're living in back when I think it was ultimately passed. But I think it impacts our work in a lot of different ways. There have been some years where we've been a lot more active at this session, some years where we just haven't had capacity to do that. But I think it's an important tool, as Casey said, right? We use litigation as one tool. We use legislation as another tool, rulemaking as another tool, right? Like, community advocacy takes all shapes and forms, and we need to be using every tool we have right now.
Once again, we have been talking with Casey Hovden and Maslin Locke from the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. They have two lawsuits that are pending involving Project Jupiter. And I guess in our last 5 minutes, can you just kind of review again what the status of those two are? Where are they in the process, and what are the next steps for those?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So for that first lawsuit that we filed in October regarding the county's adoption of those two ordinances in violation of both local and state law because they had an incomplete application and the public administrative record was incomplete such that there's no way they could have reviewed everything and made the fully informed decision that was required under the law. We went through all the judges in the 3rd Judicial District, and the case went up to the Supreme Court to be appointed to a 6th Judicial District judge. And so we have that case appointed there. There's been a ton of briefings and filings. We've had motions to intervene that will be heard soon by Oracle Corporation is attempting to intervene, as well as some of the other Project Jupiter companies in the case. So We're prepping for a hearing on that. And then with our second lawsuit, that was filed just a couple weeks ago against the county based on the Open Meetings Act violation committed during that September 19th hearing. And so that's been appointed a judge down here in the 3rd Judicial District in Las Cruces. And the county's been served, so we have to wait, I think, around 25 more days or so for the county to respond, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. And you're going against Oracle, so there's all the money in the world on the other side, but justice, that shouldn't matter, we would hope.
Right. Yeah, we would hope.
Yeah. What haven't we asked you now that we're in our last 2 or 3 minutes, and what final points you feel like need to be made?
Yeah, no, thank you. I'll go a little bit, and then I'll pass it to Maslin, too. Just up front again about the water issue and just how big of an impact that's going to have on all of New Mexico, but especially our southern New Mexico communities. It goes down to, of course, people's access to clean and safe drinking water, but then also where we get our drinking water from and where we get our water from for our farming and for our local businesses is our groundwater aquifer that we all share here in southern New Mexico, but also with El Paso, Texas and Juarez, Mexico. And that is rapidly draining. So when we think about a big project coming to town like Project Jupiter that's going to be sucking all that water up, that leaves less water for our farmers, for our small businesses, for all the folks that have like grown up here, live here, and are from here. And so just to think about that water context, you know, and really what a big project like this coming to the community really means for everybody, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on.